Welcome to Is That Cashmere? The podcast that takes you on a journey to rediscover the questions of our youth and offers a fresh perspective on how we'd answer them today. Join us as we hear stories, insights, and advice from a diverse array of entrepreneurs and executives from around the world. Now get ready to unravel the threads of experience and wisdom with hosts Becca Heft and Anna Kincannon.
Anna, yesterday we launched the podcast. So flipping cool. I think we've had a couple hundred downloads already in the first 24 hours. I'm amazed.
It's amazing. My phone was blowing up all day, like yesterday into midnight. And, you know, I was like, it's amazing. How do you do this? I'm like, this is not sustainable. My life is not sustainable right now.
Look at this. I had my high school history teacher reach out to me. And he said, I'm so excited. I'm going to listen right now. And then I asked for feedback and I haven't heard from him. What do you think that means?
Maybe he didn't finish. I don't know.
Oh my God.
Maybe it's coming. Just wait for it.
Yep. Yep. Cool.
Well, I'm excited. I mean, it's out there. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit uncomfortable. I feel like I'm not good at sharing my personal life. Right. I've always been very protective of it. So being out there with my picture, with my voice, I'm a little bit scared, but excited at the same time.
Don't be scared. It's going to be fun. But we are going to mix things up a little bit this episode because we're going to be talking about some cashmere confessions that we received. But I wanted to introduce our guest, and I'm super excited because gosh, Melissa, how long have we known each other?
Oh, it's been a minute.
A fat minute, I think.
It might be close to 20 years.
Ugh, yikes, that's crazy. So
possible?
Yeah, I think it, wait, no. All right, so here's the deal. How I know Melissa is through an ex-boyfriend. So if I think about when I started dating Doug, it was in 2005. So that's about the time I met you. So almost 20 years. Yeah, you're right. Oh my God, how did that happen?
We're too young for that.
We are. And we look fabulous, I have to say. But this is Melissa Joy. She started her own company, Pearl Planning. I think it was like 5 years ago.
Yeah, five and a half.
Yeah, it's amazing. And she also has her own podcast called Women's Money and Wisdom. And you can listen to it on anywhere you find a podcast. Am I right?
All the things. Yes.
All the things. Amazing. All right. We're super glad you're here. Let's talk about some cashmere confessions, though, that we got in, because I wanted you to weigh in on some of what we got here, Melissa. So let me just pull it up here. So we the first one received. And as a mom, I'm kind of laughing about this one, although I shouldn't. So the first one received was from Joseph out of Athens, Georgia. And he said, and this was it, do less drugs. it wasn't don't do drugs. It was do
this
less
is,
drugs.
This is our audience group, but sure. I think
I like it. I like the honesty.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it was. It really was. Let's see. And so the other one we got was received from Janice. And this is why I thought it was so perfect that we have Melissa here, you know, financial planning guru. She said, don't buy so many Jimmy Choo shoes.
And oh, I want Jimmy Choo shoes.
I do too. I can't afford them.
Okay, do you own one? I have a question.
I do not. Do you?
No, neither do I. I'm not a very big materialistic, like I'm not into purses and I'm not into expensive shoes.
I also don't like to wear shoes that are uncomfortable. And I feel like if you invested in some Jimmy Choo shoes, you might need to have some like elevation going on in those shoes.
I think you're right. And I think knowing my luck, because this has happened, if you know me, that I fall a lot and it's not. It's not because of any reason other than I'm uncoordinated. So running into walls and falling is pretty much how I roll. So I prefer like the really comfy Sorels, you know, that I can walk around in. And I feel like it's like safety shoes.
There's no vanity in the shoes that I'm buying. I have a couple pairs that I haven't worn that would be cute if I had the occasion, but it's not happening much nowadays.
I feel like since COVID, I maybe wore heels less than 10 times. Like I'm into flats now. This is it. And I don't think I can go back. I'm done.
Well, you know, I'm not looking for a man. I'm married to a wonderful guy. Like I don't need to bring it out. Let's put it that way.
Unless, you know, but there's always the case. Becca, you and I will blow up, make lots of money. Then we can just go buy ourselves some Jimmy Choo's. I'm not against it. Let's put it that way.
And we're going to invite Melissa to join. But she's going to teach us today how to plan for the future and retirement.
Is that what we're going to talk about? Okay.
Well, some, yes.
I love it.
Yay.
I do love my job. So, you know, please let's go.
Well, you know, Melissa, our podcast is all about kind of career advice, right? So I want to go to the beginning. I want to know your journey into wealth management.
Oh my gosh. My journey is so, it's a journey of serendipity because I basically didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up. I answered a want ad for an assistant at a financial planning firm. And basically I knew I was pretty good at office jobs and had worked at a mortgage company that my dad happened to be running. So used nepotism to get some summer job hours, or nepotism, or just was told you will be working Monday through Friday, spring break and holidays and summers. So I knew I could work in offices, got a job. I applied at law firms, a financial planner's office, and got the job with a financial planner and really just thought I was like, you know, kind of twiddling my thumbs until I figured out what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. But I guess through lack of initiative at that point in my life, my early 20s, ended up sticking around long enough for other people to see possibilities in me and ended up working in a different company where they asked me to start doing investment research that they didn't have time to do themselves as financial advisors. And so I worked my way up and changed from a job to a career and learned a ton and really spent the first 15 years of my career just working on investments, doing investment research, helping call clients and tell them what to buy or sell at the instruction of somebody else. And then eventually I built out an investment department at that firm. We grew and were around $1 billion. And then I kind of climbed that mountain and felt like the job felt kind of samey. That would have been similar timing to when I knew you, Becca, and started to be a financial planner, which most people are like, no, you said you were doing investments, Melissa, like same deal, right? But it actually is different. It includes investing, but it includes a lot of you and not just accounts and statements and stuff like that. So there's more to it. Of course, there's more to your retirement than your investment accounts or your retirement accounts. So that's what I do today.
Amazing.
That's awesome.
It was a very happy circumstance, but I cannot imagine doing anything else. I love what I do. I do a lot of it. So, you know, it's a lot of hours in my week, but it never gets old. I don't feel like, certainly there are difficult days, but I found the right career for myself, or the universe did for me.
How did you come up with the name Pearl Planning?
So Pearl is an irritation that turns into something beautiful. It's also my grandmother's middle name and my daughter's middle name. And when I left my former company where I was a partner, it was not like something I'd mapped out, like, hey, I'm going to start a company after I get to this point. It was, you know, really just me and my partners weren't on the same page. And I was the person kind of on the outside looking in. And so it was an irritation for me. It was kind of like an unexpected, I mean, we all have those career phases. Some of the most successful people I know had moments, crossroads where, you know, you did not expect to be either have that pink slip or confrontation, or just find yourself in a dissatisfactory position. And that's, you know, kind of was my summer of a reckoning and a turning point. And so I started the company out of that. And that really, to me, like no grit, no pearl, which we have in our kind of tagline, is where I was at and where a lot of people are when they reach out about a financial plan.
I love that. You know, I have to ask you a question because, and I actually wrote out this question because I'm like, oh, I got to be careful not to say the person's name. But I think it's a really important question to ask because too many people that I know are in this situation. So I have a divorced girlfriend, okay, who just struggles financially. She's never been a saver. On top of it, she thought she was going to live off her ex's pension in 401k. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out she's going to get less than $300 a month. And I'm like, sweetheart.
Oh, my God.
I know. Sweetheart, you got to figure it out. And she's 50. So what can she do at this late stage to help herself?
Is she divorced yet?
Yes, she is.
Okay. Well, the first thing is to just, you know, face reality with someone who's caring and empathetic and kind, because it's so easy to beat yourself up and it can be so intimidating to just sit there with all of your anxiety and worries and just be like, oh my God, what am I going to do? You know, we suffer silently when it comes to money in so many cases. Yeah. I know that because I see people who are rock stars at money and people have no clue, and they all feel that, you know, kind of insecurity. Imposter syndrome and money is like a thing for all of us. I think it's just closer to the surface for women. So getting help, even if she can't afford it, there's great organizations. Like there's an organization called Savvy Ladies that is certified financial planners that are donating their time to assist people. SavvyLadies.org, founded by a really great certified financial planner who was looking to help people like her grandmother who suffered from domestic violence. But then you just got to put one foot in front of the other. You had an idea of what your life would be like and it's different. Okay, there's some emotions, there's some, you know, processing. A financial planner is not a psychologist, but they might be adjacent if done right. And then we look at, you know, what is the reality, and flexibility and resilience are what you're, you know, I'm hoping that she'll be able to bring to the table of like, okay, we can't, picturing what your future will be is not like a 1 week like project. It's over time, being flexible, being open to, you know, working, looking at different options. And fortunately, in my work, it's not transactional. It's not a moment in time. It's relational. It's over time. So if you work with the right person, they can really help you get used to the new reality.
And is it SavvyLadies.org? Are they national then?
They are national. They're located in New York City in terms of their hub, but they're a network of women. You guys talk about networks a lot. They're yes. A network of women around the country. And so anybody could go in and ask for some time and they would get a one-on-one hour with a financial planner with follow-up. So it's a really great resource.
That is amazing.
That is awesome. Yeah. So Melissa, I was doing some homework before today and, you know, came across your podcast, 215 episodes. Amazing. Congratulations.
Are you tired? We're recording like episode 10 right now with you. So are you tired? Because you've done like a lot more.
Well, I have to tell you, I did have a co-host for most of those episodes and she did a lot of the production and a lot of the recording. She's since found a perfect fit for her at another company as a financial advisor. So I'm carrying the whole backpack today. But I am so exhilarated by our guest list. We're recording such interesting episodes. You know, people may be like, hey, are you going to run out of topics? And I'm like, no, I'm like ready to record on straight through. So I know for you guys, because you're so creative and you have so many ideas, and I've loved hearing your initial conversations, that it's really going to be continue to be fun. There is just no limit to these types of conversations. And, you know, anybody who wants to listen in, I'll give a little plug for Women's Money Wisdom.
There yes. So I'm going to ask you a question. So going back, you have 215 episodes. What has been your favorite episode to record? And then what has been the most popular, right? And to me, probably popular is also what's the common challenge, right? What do people seek your help?
Okay, so a bunch of people in South America listened to this episode about residents. I think it was like the algorithm took over about doctors who are medical residents and it was with a great guest. Doesn't that work? But I have no idea what happened. So I think that's kind of a fluke. You know, I just pulled up an episode on first generation wealth. I think providing access and inclusion is something that isn't the primary focus of our podcast, but thinking about people of color, access to money when it comes to communities that have less financial education, which in aggregate is also women. If you think about our experiences, women just didn't make money decisions, couldn't even have credit cards more than 50 years ago. Some of those episodes are my favorite. I mentioned that episode with an awesome financial planner named Valerie Rivera. I know you're from Chicago, Becca, and she's doing great work, primarily with Latina, first generation people of wealth. And so I would recommend that episode as a listen. Yeah, there have been a lot of fun episodes. You know, another real popular one, though, was with my former co-host. She took the semaglutide in, you know, weight loss drugs. And she talked about her experience and the money with it. And that was extremely popular as well.
Amazing. Wow. So what I love, I'm sorry, Anna, I'm going to just come in here because you're singing my song. Cause you know that I've spent a large part of my career, trying to close the financial equity gap. And I just have a real passion around that. And I think generational wealth is, I mean, you're right. Like, I feel like as a Caucasian female, like there's more conversations about generational wealth because it goes back generations, right? It goes back 3, 4, 5, 6 generations. But then you have families who either are people of color or immigrants or whatever the case is, they don't have that access to credit. Maybe they have a thin credit file. They don't have a credit score yet, you know, if they're new to the United States. So like, not that I want you to repeat that episode, but I'd love to hear like any advice you have for someone who's just coming into this. And this frankly can apply to the person who's just getting out of school and trying to build their credit score for the first time. Like, what advice do you have for those people who are just starting out and trying to build their credit and trying to build that generational wealth?
Well, if you think about it, I want to ask you guys something. Do we, like, in our more privileged communities, call it generational wealth? I don't even think we use that word. We just, you know, kind of talk about, like, I have an expectation of the way myself and my kids will live. We're going to maintain the same standard of living. I hear more generational wealth when I listen to people like Valerie, who I know some other Black women financial planners who are talking about generational women and Black male financial planners because they see what they don't have.
See, I always tell my kids, and you know, part of me is that we're building a business on the side. So, and I expect our kids to chip in and help. And if it's paint, and I'm like, this, you're building a generational wealth. That's my message.
I love it.
Like every time they complain, I'm like, this is your generational wealth. This is going to be yours, but you need to, you know, kind of like your dad made you work at the office.
Yeah. I just don't know that we use that language in the same way, even though we are like, it's implied. And so what I would suggest is, and you know, the other thing, Becca, is like those communities, there's a lot of insurance salespeople. There aren't a lot of financial advisors. There's not like the bros at the clubs that are, you know, like, you know, kind of talking that talk. And so there's just less access. So first of all, we need to, when we're thinking about careers, we need more people that are doing the work, who have different experiences and different backgrounds desperately when it comes to personal finance. We just are kind of an old boys club. And even, you know, many of the women are white and came from positions of privilege, even if they didn't have the financial background. So we desperately need more minority representation in our field. But if you're the person who's trying to get a leg up, do take advantage of the education in your employment networks, the benefits, do the enrollment into your 401k, and then start to read, start to understand and listen, and have conversations with your like-minded, interested peers, and seek out those who are like you, who are, you know, kind of positions and beacons of financial literacy. They're out there. It's just unfortunately less so than in some other professions.
Yeah, I think people are intimidated by what they don't know. Right.
Totally. You don't even know what to ask. You don't feel like you feel like everybody else has it figured out when they really don't. That's what I know.
Right. And I think some people have fear of money. Right. And many people do. Right. Because money is control. And, you know, Becca and I have been working in financial institution for decades. And I was fortunate to be on the treasury side and kind of my mentality of money is just numbers, right? Because every single bank, there's actually no cash on hand, right? It's just numbers moving on the screen and money making money. That's what money is, right? Just having cash in your bank account. I mean, it's great for emergencies and all that stuff. That's not what I'm saying. But again, how do you take your money and you make the money and you work the money? But a lot of people don't have the perception or understanding or just a simple fear.
Yeah. And, you know, banking has more access, right? Everybody needs a bank account, or most people do, after you get to, you know, if you're new to this country or have less access, it just has more coverage. And I feel like there's more people of color in banking than there is in personal finance. And so, you know, do take advantage of banking programs, because there's more personal finance programs at great financial institutions, like you guys both know, where is some, you know, kind of financial apps and things like that that are starting to kind of perk up that are helpful. And then I would say the first thing is like participate in your company retirement plan, because many of your listeners are going to be W-2 employees. And if you don't, ask your accountant how you can start a retirement plan if you're working for yourself. So that's a great first step.
Yeah, I actually have a question for you and maybe a feedback. I have a friend that's is going through a divorce, right?
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's not a pleasant experience, but I think what we as females don't think about is, you know, I think having a wealth management individual or financial planner that can help you along the way when you're happy and you're married and you're together, but in the same time, having the conversation while you're still happy, right? But then by the time, kind of think, what if it ever gets to the point that we have to go different ways? I think a lot of people don't think about it, where to me, finances, yes, you're together, but then there's also an aspect of individuality that needs to come into play.
The right financial planner has to honor both people in the room. And one of the biggest challenges, not to pick on guys, but I can flip it around. One of the advantages of being a woman in financial planning is people come to me and say, we had somebody, but he never looked at my wife when she came to the meetings. And sometimes it's the guy that like reaches out first. So you need like equal space in the room. I do not want to use your friend as an example, Anna, but like, if you can have a better relationship with money, then your marriage is likely to be in a better place. Because one of the major contributors to marital strife and you know, conflict and divorce is comes down to money, whether it's financial infidelity, discomfort, mistakes a partner makes, or feeling shut out of the room and a power imbalance. And we've done some episodes on communication, power imbalance, things like that. Good financial planning would help you whether you're married or divorced, because it is helping to give a foundation of safety for whatever comes down the road.
Yeah. So and I'm kind of going back to my friend is, right, what happened is, you know, you do all this savings and now you look at this, okay, you're 50 years old and now you're divorced and you just gave your half of your 401k away, right?
Oh, and it hurts more to lose that half than it does to gain 50%, right? Like, it is so painful personally. I am a certified divorce financial analyst too. It's not all the only work that I do, but gosh, go to the CDFA website and find, if you're going through divorce, don't just go it alone with an attorney if it's more complicated when it comes to money, because the attorney is good at dividing things up and their job is done. And a certified divorce financial analyst can advocate for your future self in terms of how you divide the money and how you're prepared to deal with that.
And one thing too is I really think it's important as a couple, you have to decide what your roles are. Because frankly, for example, my husband and I, Tim, he's not a saver. He's not a planner. So I know I'm the money focused. I'm, you know, putting our investments in different places. I'm controlling, you know, decreasing our taxable income, all of that. At the same time, we have separate accounts. And yeah. I think, I mean, it makes complete sense for us because then he has his money and he has his budget and he plans it. But then I have the family budget and I'm, you know, working that and trying to increase our savings.
I think that works. There is no set template where the financial professional says this is how it's going to be. You know, in my family's case, we have separate accounts too. Both of our names are on all of the accounts. We didn't have a lot of money when we got, you know, married, and we've been fortunate to kind of work it out over time to have more of a, you know, kind of net worth. But you know, there's not a lot of like, hey, can I spend this or that? In some families, it's totally a family conversation and that's what they want. And that's great too. The only thing that I really struggle with is when people aren't, able to think of their money collectively when it comes to, for example, retirement or big goals, housing and things like that. That's really tough for me as a financial planner, because if there's like a, if there's not a point in time where it can kind of be bridged while there's still acknowledgement that you each have your own money, gosh, it's really hard for me to, you know, like both of your expenses are fit into the equation. And if it's completely like there's not a bridge between the money, then I struggle in those engagements and, you know, frankly should probably send them to somebody else because it just isn't a great fit for me.
Yeah. And frankly, you're right that there has to be a bridge, you know, when you have that kind of divide and it's not a complete divide, right? But it's like, who's better at doing this than the other person? So let's take advantage of it. But also, one of the things that I love about Tim is that he wants to learn. So he's learning about all of this. And he has, we have this beautiful Brady Bunch blended family, and he's teaching his, my bonus kids about saving and what that means and taking advantage of your 401k match, all of that good stuff, which has been really, to me, it's been really, really cool. I actually think my ex-husband, who was an actuary, believe it or not, okay, married to an actuary, he taught me everything I know.
Well, there's a positive.
Gotta find those silver linings, right?
That's right.
So here's a question for your audience or for you guys. If you're working with a financial professional, which I know not everybody does, and it's not right for everyone, like I'm not judging, do you feel comfortable enough with that person to say, hey, Tim's the spender, I'm the saver, I'm the planner, this is how, when we came into our relationship, this is what our experiences were coming with. Because if you can be that comfortable and you're working with the right person who can listen, which not everybody can listen either, that can be beautiful, because then they can be the bridge when one of you has anxiety over a decision or isn't on the same page. They can help to have both of your presence in the decisions and the room. And that takes nuance. That's not everybody, but that is what my ideal would be for most people, is where I can understand, hey, you know, like so-and-so came from a divorce background where they like saw everything go down the drain. And so they're always going to feel that scarcity and that anxiety. And we need to honor that in the room as we're making decisions, and maybe take some more space and time to make sure they're comfortable with it. Or maybe we need different mixes of our investments. And so I'm just curious about the experiences of people as to that.
Yeah, my experience is very similar to yours, right? My husband is not, you know, he's not comfortable with his money.
He doesn't
come from money, you know, and I control all of it. And I say, hey, your name is on every single account. You just have no access to it. And And the reason why is like, I mean, and again, I mean, we got married, I was 22 years old, we had no money. And you know, if he has $20 in the pocket, he'll spend it. He can't have money. I remember like, I was like, where's the $20? He goes, oh, I bought some muffins. I'm like, well, you don't even eat muffins. Like, what are you talking about? Like, so this is kind of where, how my life works. So I had a financial planner who was actually a family friend. It was a mom of one of my friends. And then, which I had an ability, she knew who we were, right? She knew my husband, she knew myself and our personality. So it worked really good. And then she sold her company and a male took over. And, you know, we met up for coffee once and kind of had the conversation. Then a year later, we had another meeting. At that point, my husband joined. It was all about my husband, you know, hey, I want to take you golfing. Let's go golfing. Let's do this, A, B, C. And my husband is very good about it. He's like, hey, don't talk to me. I know nothing. You need to talk to her. So my husband left because he did end up going golfing. I ended up sitting at the coffee table with the financial planner. And at that point, I was managing investment portfolio of $14 billion for a large financial institution.
Amazing.
So I actually printed out a Bloomberg sheets for every single fund that he invested the money in.
Yeah.
And I started asking questions, and I had very clear knows that I kind of wanted to see what's underlying every single fund and what I was comfortable and what I wasn't. And it's probably within 3 minutes, it just blew up. He became extremely aggressive.
Wow.
I'm uncomfortable hearing this. This must have been so frustrating to experience.
So, it was very unprofessional. So I ended up just, you know, leaving. And I said, I'm moving my money. Like, this is like not happening. And again, we weren't talking about a lot of money, but the picture here is that, hey, I know how you invested my money. You didn't do any research. You put my age in the computer. It gave you some funds. You distributed my money equally. And when I'm asking you deep questions, you have either no understanding or no knowledge of it. And so I end up, so then my account ended up moving into a big bucket. And I don't want to say the company name or anything.
Yeah, a big custodian.
A big custodian. So, yeah. And then I get a 1-800 call. And this was, I want to say less than 10 years ago, maybe like 7 years ago or so. And then I get the call from 1-800 and they're like, who can we connect you with? And I said, I want a female. And like, well, we don't have any female.
Crickets.
Like in Twin Cities area, like Midwest area. And I said, and then leave me in the pool of no ownership until you have a female to take over my account. That's it. So yeah, I ended up moving the money and just managing it myself. But like that has.
Well, I think I know someone who can help you, Anna. Name's Melissa.
Hi, Melissa. This is why my it's such a blue ocean. I mean, I know you guys are marketing people. It is such a blue ocean out there for thoughtful. Some people call it the human side of advice. You know, like where you start with a person, because I would be starting with hearing about you guys and how things operate. And we wouldn't even talk about the accounts, even though, like, you know, I'm a geek and would love to talk about accounts, you know, in depth ad nauseum until we understood like what makes you guys tick, what you're working on. It's just such a different experience. And that's why, like, you know, even with the advent of AI and other things, like life is so good for financial planners that can be relatable and not, you know, you guys are marketing people. So like not look like the same, like, hey, we've got a lot of money and power and therefore you should trust us. You know, if you can, that breath of fresh air seems to really work because people are like, here's my sob story. I just had a client this week who's transferring accounts to us. And when she notified her advisor, who really seemed to have some disconnects, but she's been very careful about the process of interviewing, he like called her and was angry with her. And I was like, no, that's like another sign, like more confirmation, not to like, you know, not to pile on, but like that is not appropriate professionally at all.
Totally agree. I think if there's one advice that I can give anyone is to actually build a relationship with your financial planner, right? Because when you build it, and I can totally, I know it from my personality, I would be more invested into saving more. Does that make sense? Like if I have somebody who is there on the sidelines cheering me up and say, hey, this is your goal. This is how much money. Let's do this. Right. I'm more willing to be like, okay, I'm gonna write another $1,000 and put it away. Versus managing it myself, right? I'm like, okay, you know, I might put an extra $1,000, I might not, I don't know, right? But having that somebody else to push you along the way, that would be my recommendation.
They should be your cheerleader. That's what I think. They should tell you where you're doing a great job as well as where you have opportunities. These are things that I would be looking for. I think of my colleague, Alexa, and she's not like, hey, I'll take you to golf or, you know, let me buy you 10 tickets to a fancy sports game, even though, you know, like I'd love 50 yard line tickets to Michigan football. But she is, you know, exchanging book recommendations with clients. Like that's the kind of relational that we like to operate on. It's not schmoozing. It's not like, let me throw money at you so you can send money back to me. It's really getting to know people on a personal level. I mean, some of the, like one of my favorite stories is a client. She talked about wanting to retire early and move to Italy. And I was like, you can totally do that. But, and she was had a, like a job close to the C-suite, communications executive at a big company. I was like, you can do that. But she'd been passed over for some, she'd been getting the promotions without getting the salary. And so I was like, you need to make more now. And what she did with that is she started shopping for a new job. I didn't say you need a new job. I was like, we can change the goals too. She got a job that doubled her salary, had equity compensation, reporting to the CEO, big change, big high profile female position, and totally made that dream possible. And then she came back to me and said, Melissa, it was our conversation that prompted me to look for this job. These are the types of conversations where it's relational. This is like what makes my skin tingle. And it's not about, yes, it does matter what she was invested in, but that wasn't the point of the conversation. That's not where I can drive the most value.
That is an amazing, amazing story. Thanks for sharing that. And Melissa, so we're coming up to the end of our podcast here. And so
it's been so fun. I want to do it again.
I know. We'll have to have you on again. But you know what? We have to ask you what your cashmere confession is. So please tell all.
When I was just a pup. When I was growing up, I've already described to you that I just didn't know what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. I spent my younger years, high school, and so achievement oriented, but I didn't have like kind of personal satisfaction and a better sense of self that I think you guys have discussed, like women of a certain age just learn to, you know, like not be a little more authentic, not as a bunch of a people pleaser, which I feel like is such a truth for so many Gen X and millennial women of just like you need everybody else to be happy with you and you never get a chance to ask yourself how you're doing. I think that what I would tell my former self, my younger self, is that even like to use the skills I knew how to be successful at work in my personal life and give myself a little bit of a breathing room and give myself a break. It all worked out in the end. And I just like had those, my 20s were kind of like, you know, a little bit of scarcity, a little bit lost and, you know, give myself the breathing room that you don't have to have it all figured out by age 30. It's not a race. And things work out in the end. I also had almost no money for, you know, when I, got out of school until I was mid-30s. I just, like, you know, didn't get to do a lot of things that people often do on their bucket list, the travel, the destination weddings and stuff like that. And so, you know, I would tell myself that there will be time in the future where you have that opportunity, or at least there will be money in the future. I don't know if there's as much time. But I also learned a lot of lessons by stubbing my toe and scraping my knee when I was younger that I can use to be relatable and empathetic to people that are feeling those experiences today.
Melissa, it has been a joy to have you. No pun intended.
Thank you for having me. I love the podcast. I can't wait to share, you know, share the love with other people and let them understand about, you know, the work you guys are doing and how you're encouraging people to do more and do better.
Well, and thank you. And we talked about your podcast, Money and Wisdom, but Pearl Planning, where can they find out? Where can our listeners find out more about Pearl Planning? Get a hold of you if they need some financial wisdom.
Well, if you go to pearlplan.com, it's really easy to schedule an introductory meeting with me or just learn more or just listen to episodes of the podcast because we have a lot of specific financial topics that I think are relatable. We also do webinars on YouTube and things like that. So you can always find me there. And if you don't work with me, I do encourage you. I just think working with certified financial planners can be extraordinary. It's not for everyone, but if you're feeling a little lost or feeling that imposter syndrome, there are ways to, you know, kind of boost yourself up and increase your money game at the same time.
Thank you, Melissa.
This has been Is That Cashmere? If you want to share your cashmere confession or would like to share some of your personal insights about your career journey, email cashmereconfess@gmail.com. That is cashmereconfess@gmail.com.